Welcome to the Learning Well podcast, where we take learning seriously, but not ourselves.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to this episode of the Learning Well. We've got a fun and exciting show for you today. I am your host, Miriam Taylor, and I am excited to start the year with industry professional Grant Tucker, who is joining us. Grant, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and the industry that you're involved in?
Yeah, thanks, Miriam. So I am Grant Tucker. I'm a learning and development manager for Sonepar USA. I've been with the company about 10 years now. You know, I'm primarily responsible for creating and managing development content for our associates across the U.S.
Well, thank you, Grant. And I know we're going to hear in just a little bit, quite a bit more about your journey, which will be good, and a little more about the company. But I'm also so pleased to be joined by Blaine Gregory, who's the director of consulting with the Mindspring team, and got to know Grant quite well on this project. So Blaine, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself as well?
Yeah, so I'm Blaine Gregory, and as Miriam mentioned, I'm our director of consulting here at Mindspring. So I actually have a background in organizational behavior management, which means sort of encompassing of all performance management. And that's everything from process improvement into learning and training and development. And so I spent about the last decade focused on that learning and development side and had the pleasure of working with Grant and his team over the last year.
Yeah, and Blaine is a huge asset to the Mindspring team. And as we kind of go through today's podcast, we're going to hear largely from Grant and in his background and kind of some of the needs of his company, but also, you know, in ways that consulting really helped him, some specific consulting engagements. And Blaine will sort of share with us what those looked like. But to begin, a good portion of our audience is either in the L&D industry or something very related or interested in getting there. So I always like to ask our guests who are already in that industry, Grant, how did you get where you are today? Like, where did you start? What kind of training or background or degrees did you have? Just talk us through your journey a little bit.
Yeah, so my journey into the L&D space is kind of interesting. I went to school for visual communications, and my minor was in media arts. I've always been a very creative person, always had a very creative mind, loved making things. So in college, I really was focused on, you know, graphic design, web development. I also really enjoyed media production, so creating videos and whatnot. And while I was in college, I got an internship for this small e-learning company, really just helping them to develop new courses for their clients. So that really kind of got my foot into the door in the industry of L&D. I was hired by Sonepar about 10 years ago to really, you know, create e-learning courses, redesign their website for the learning management system, create training and communication videos. That was one thing they really liked about me at the time, is I had that, you know, video background. So in the past few years, though, my role has really shifted more into the instructional design space. So while I have that VizCom degree, I got my MBA several years ago as well. But a couple of years ago, I got an instructional design certification from the ATD, and really, sure. Enjoyed. I thought, okay, this is really something that I think I can see myself going a lot more deeply into and discovering more throughout the next several years of my career. So really my role, like I said, has shifted more towards instructional design, developing and managing our program. So that's where, you know, Mindspring came in, and my work with Blaine over the past year or so is really been fantastic in terms of being able to, you know, take what I learned from that certification and really put it to work for Sonepar.
Yeah, well, and that's really one of the reasons I kind of wanted you to share, is that I get questions a lot. I know Blaine has gotten them, just about, well, I have this background in, you know, a certain area. Do I need to get an entire master's degree? Do I need to get, what about like all these places that offer certifications? Is that really enough? Like, what all has to happen in order for me to get into, say, purely instructional design? So I think it's really helpful for people to hear. Obviously, you had a ton of design background. and a ton of experience just working with that e-learning company, you know, through college. But I think it's helpful for them to hear. But obviously, like, a certification from ATD too is another, like, you know, they're leaders in the industry and all of that. So I think it's interesting for our listeners to kind of hear that there's a lot of different ways that you can put a career together in this way that give you different areas of expertise. And then Blaine's experience focusing on organizational development, performance, change, behavior, all of that too is another very interesting way to be in the industry. But let's broaden our conversation just a little bit. Since we're talking about the industry, I'd love to hear from both of you. But Grant, through your perspective at Sonepar and your involvement there, what kinds of trends, like, what are you seeing in the industry right now? What trends are you seeing for you personally, like, at Sonepar? What are some of the pressing needs that you're experiencing right now?
Yeah, so just a little bit, you know, kind of taking a step back, a little background in Sonepar. It is a global company. We are, you know, one of the world leaders in B2B electrical distribution. So, you know, any products that go into, you know, making a building, going from nothing to a completely finished product building, we sell all the electrical products that go into that building. The structure of our company, from a global perspective, we have, you know, a presence in many different countries across the globe, 45,000 associates worldwide. In the U.S., we are right around 10,000 associates. And Sonepar USA is really an umbrella company that that manages about 16 different operating companies underneath it. So one of the challenges we have is we have a very decentralized workforce. And when you have that decentralized workforce, especially at our company, you know, some operating companies may have a different level of resources than other companies. And one of the challenges, you know, I think you could probably argue that every company coming out of the pandemic is facing that hybrid remote reality, right? And our industry in general is, you know, more accustomed to the traditional in-person classroom training. So, you know, through the pandemic, I think we were kind of forced to learn quickly and, you know, adapt new methodologies to how we approach learning as a whole, which honestly, I think in a lot of ways was good for us because it kind of broadened our horizon to, hey, learning can occur anywhere. It doesn't necessarily have to just happen in the classroom with an instructor or a facilitator and someone going through slides. So really that's one thing I'm definitely seeing in the industry as far as my company is concerned is, you know, how do we create, with such a decentralized workforce, how do we take, get a standard process, you know? How do we deliver a standard product across 16 different companies that all have a little bit different personality and different resources? So that's one thing that has been definitely a challenge, but something that is really, really crucial to our success is being able to do that well and, you know, I could probably toss it to Blaine. She could talk more to that in terms of, you know, how we've partnered together to really, and probably other, I'm sure you have other clients that have very similar needs as well.
No, I mean, I was just going to say, we definitely see that with many of our other clients. Depends on their size, on the industry, on their locations, but really more than ever, we're seeing where people are making learning much more accessible in a variety of different mediums and in a variety of different ways in order to make it much more ingrained in the system, where, like you said, it can happen anywhere. I think learning professionals in general are also understanding that learning isn't always even just formal learning, but it's happening, you know, in those conversations, it's happening in coaching, it's happening with your peer to peers. And how can we help to facilitate that where even those conversations are something that you know, they're happening in the way that we want them to happen, and they're happening in an effective way. So really taking much more of a holistic view of how learning is occurring.
Yeah. And I was, as we were preparing for this, I was just so interested in you, what you were saying, Grant, in terms of sort of this historical learning that is very traditional, and we all sit in a classroom and there's slides, and it's very common. I mean, Blaine just attested to that. We have lots of clients, you know, who that's how they perceive it. And while the pandemic sort of forced everyone to move online, what I love, Grant, is with your background and kind of, you know, Blaine, you partnering, just being able to help an organization understand it's not even just like classroom or e-learning. Like there's a huge range of ways that you can learn. Like you said, from coaching, from just a quick conversation with a colleague, or maybe I'm making like a quick Loom video to help someone out. But and that's what I think is so fun about, you know, this project here, but just sort of helping organizations think through all the different possibilities that they probably weren't aware of. And that's okay. I mean, that's your area of expertise, not necessarily what theirs is. Anything else, Grant, or you, I think you pretty much covered this, but.
Yeah. I mean, kind of piggybacking on what you said, that is really how I bring value to the table, right? Is the organization has a challenge, a need that, you know, may or may not need some kind of training to find that solution that they're looking for. But either way, I can partner with our operating companies, with those stakeholders, and, you know, listen to their needs, and then try to, you know, use the ADDIE methodology to determine, you know, okay, where exactly are there gaps? How can we kind of take your challenges and find area to get to a place where we're you know, performing more efficiently.
Yeah, that's a great segue. And I, you know, thinking of your specific situation, like you said, having a, you know, lots of other companies that you're trying to help standardize, and yet they have different personalities, and just sort of a larger issue than just, hey, let's take this classroom training and move it into e-learning. So we know you engaged MindSpring because there is a need there. How did this turn into like a consulting relationship as opposed to just sort of a vendor make this stuff, hand it back? What did that look like?
Yeah, great question. So yeah, we reached out to MindSpring, you know, because we had kind of information that MindSpring was, you know, one of the industry leaders in terms of putting together e-learnings and really, you know, not just e-learning, but learning in general was very, you know, very top of mind for them in terms of different modalities. So one of the challenges that I was tasked with, it was about a year and a half ago now. It doesn't feel like feels like it was forever ago, but yeah, about a year and a half ago, I was tasked with, you know, we really don't have much for entry-level managers. And really at first it didn't even start with entry-level managers. It was just manager training. We needed to provide some sort of manager training. So, you know, after getting that instructional design certification, understanding the approach that I should be taking with this, I pretty much did a needs analysis across the organization to say, okay, let's just take a survey of all of our managers, as well as, you know, I did several individual interviews with some best in class managers, asking the question, you know, what makes a best in class manager? How did you learn the types of things that you learned whenever you started your job as a people manager? And then from a survey perspective, it, you know, we were kind of asking a lot of those same things, but more to a wider audience. I think we got about 180 respondents in the survey that we sent out. And, you know, one of the bombshells that came out of the survey results was that 70% of our organization, or 70% of respondents, said that they learned how to manage people by asking others or just figuring it out for themselves. About 30% had some type of formal training around, you know, how to be a people manager, but 70% of respondents said that, you know, they just kind of figured this out. They were kind of more or less thrown into the fire, and it's really, you know, sink or swim. So
yeah, that's kind of scary. Probably not uncommon, but like
it's not. And that's the thing. Another part of the needs analysis was just kind of benchmarking what other companies do, and you know, in conversations with other people in the industry, it sounds like this is not something many people have as just general manager training. So we decided to narrow our focus away from, you know, just a broad manager training, because we can't boil the ocean, right? And really narrowed our focus to new Sonepar managers. So after we did that pretty thorough needs analysis on our end, we kind of saw what we needed to create. At that point, we really engaged with Mindspring to come on board and really take a look at everything we had done and give us a good consultation into how should we approach the design and the development aspect of this project. So whenever we did bring in Mindspring, we opted to go with curriculum mapping and blueprinting as a part of that engagement. And, you know, really that was defining what our objectives are from this. I had some rough objectives, but you know, we fleshed those out much more so and fine-tuned all the details that we were looking for. And really our overall program goal with this was to make our new managers more competent and competent. We're not trying to make experts, right? I mean, we could, but that would take a much deeper amount of training. And what we were trying to do is, you know, take someone who has never had any manager experience, people management experience, they're stepping into that role for the first time. They don't know what they're doing exactly. Hey, let's give you a standard set of training that all new Sonepar managers are going to receive. And this is the baseline. These are the expectations of you as a new manager. These are how we do things. These are our processes. These are our tools and our systems. So after the curriculum mapping and blueprinting, we started to develop 21 e-learning modules across 5 macro topics. And, you know, one of the reasons we did go with Mindspring is because for me, it was really important for us to own the intellectual property of the materials. You know, we could have gone with another company that may have done similar work. It may have been more or less expensive, but it was very important that, you know, once this is finished, we can keep this program more evergreen long term. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like I said, I have a development background, but I'm just one person. So if I was going to tackle this all myself, it would have taken me, you know, much, much, much longer to produce. So Mindspring's been able to quickly, in a relatively short amount of time, produce a ton of content for us in terms of, you know, not just the curriculum mapping and blueprinting, the design scripts for every e-learning module, the development of the actual e-learning modules themselves. And then one great thing is that we own the intellectual property now, and we can, if something happens, if some of our values actually change and shift over time, we don't necessarily have to, we may go back to Mindspring, but technically in-house, we can take that content and update it ourselves because we own the IP.
Yeah, I wanted to sort of kick this to Blaine just a little bit too, to discuss, I think one of, and I know Grant, you can attest to this, but one of the interesting experiences when you do, you know, if you have whatever your instructional design, you know, or background is, when you work with someone who has this, like you said, vast amount of content or vast need, and your impulse is to, like you said, boil the ocean because it's a big need and you want to fix it. I think one of the most effective things you can do is to do a curriculum mapping and really establish your objectives and outcomes, because it helps you narrow down. Like you said, you can't do it all, but let's do one thing really well and move from there. So I don't know if Blaine, you can just speak to kind of what you've seen as you've done this with other clients and in particular with Grant at Sonepar. How did that help sort of smooth out the development process and just even like in terms of setting priorities?
Yeah. So the curriculum map that we do is part of our alignment phase. And it's the perfect word to use when we talk about the engagement that we had with Sonepar as well, because they came to us knowing that they knew who their learner was going to be. And then they knew that they needed, like Grant said, to make sure that they were confident and competent. They had some ideas about what those people needed and what they did, but really needed to get all the stakeholders on the same page and in alignment about what that actually meant in practice. And so it was a really good opportunity for us all to get together and really ask the questions about what does this look like? So how do I know that someone is doing that? What are the benefits of them doing it correctly? What are some of the ways that, or some of the things we're losing when they're not doing it that way? And having everybody all in that room during that consulting, those consulting engagements really helped to get everybody in alignment on what that looked like. And then again, being able to focus the scope down even farther. So really taking the ocean and getting it much more concrete. Once you knew it was confident and competent and we can't go outside of that. And then here's what it looks like. And then here's how we think we're going to teach it. So really just kind of, not to mix metaphors, but just taking like eating the elephant one bite at a time. You know, you can't even build something like this all, you know, starting with the largest part of it. You have to take it really piece by piece. And that's why we like to, you know, we often start with a discovery. Grant's team did a little bit of that. We did a little bit of that with them through like a goal analysis to really figure out, again, what does that look like behaviorally? When does that behavior start? When does it end? Kind of going through all of that and then go much more into that alignment phase.
Yeah, thank you. And I think that's super helpful for our listeners just to kind of hear how that practically worked out. And I'm sure they heard, you know, you're talking about stakeholders in a room. And we talk a lot at MindSpring about our fear of the hidden stakeholder, because there always is one. And, you know, boy, you can be a long ways down the road and have the whole project blow up if that person has a certain amount of seniority or whatever the case may be. So I think there's some, you know, other benefits to curriculum mapping besides the actual content pieces of it, but a lot of just getting alignment within an internal team. And, you know, now we have a map and we can move forward with it.
Miriam, you mentioned the hidden stakeholder. That was one thing, I don't think I mentioned that, but that was one thing that we were very cognizant of going into this is, you know, at Sonepar, we don't want to be sitting in our castle high and mighty, deliver, you know, throwing down training.
Right,
this is what you need.
Right.
Take this training. We don't want to prescribe something without having, you know, full stakeholder buy-in. So, I mean, as we looked at this project, I didn't want it just to be myself because I don't know everything about management. I mean, we had lots of resources to work with, but we built a team that, you know, we call them strike teams at Sonepar most of the time.
Oh, love that. I like
and
that.
And we have regions. Yeah.
Okay.
And we have regions at Sonepar, so I wanted to make sure we had representation in every region with at least one person. So we made sure to do that. And if I could just give a quick shout out to my team, Phil, Tina,
sure.
Olivia, Paco, Don, and Mary, we would not have been able to put together this program as effectively as we've done without their help. I mean, their wealth of knowledge and all the nuances and, you know, being in the field day to day, and actually sitting with managers and knowing what their actual needs are and where the gaps are. That was extremely instrumental for us to be able to build an effective program.
Yeah. And for organizations that are global, that span across regions, that have different locations like that, it's really critical to get just what you said, to get those people at the table, because there are varying ways of doing this. And in order to make a more evergreen deliverable like you wanted, you're going to have to start from the ground zero, making sure that it actually does apply to all of those locations. And that's what we say when we're in alignment. I always say it's alignment on three different levels. It's alignment with the organization. Is this filling a business need? It's alignment with your learner. Is this apply to them? Is this being delivered in a way that they want? And then it's alignment with the people who are here in the room right now. And I think we definitely got that with Sonepar.
Yeah, that's a great way to explain the alignment piece and, you know, 14 different locations and or other, what did you call them?
Technically, they're operating companies. We abbreviate everything at Sonepar. If any of my colleagues are listening to this, they're probably laughing because, yeah, operating companies or as we call them, OpCos.
Okay, perfect. But I don't think that's uncommon for a lot of people in this industry to have that situation. And And I just really love the approach you have, Grant, which is we're not sitting up here just casting down what we perceive to be the best possible training. It's really, again, that learner-centric focus of determining what do they need, what does the organization need, and what do the people in this room need, and balancing all of that. Now, I understand that it's still being implemented, but what kinds of things, as you're going through, like obviously some of these measures had to be thought about before. So what are you thinking of in terms of, well, first, what are your plans for implementation? But then secondly, as you start to measure ROI, just what are some things that you're looking for?
Great question. The ROI piece is always fun, isn't it? Yeah, so we did actually start rolling out the modules in December. So the way we approached this project is we didn't want to wait till we had a perfect stamp on everything and you know, every single module was complete. We decided to take a phased rollout approach. Okay, I think sure. I think we had the first 12 modules available in late November. So 1st of December, we rolled those out. And then we should have, you know, I'm not sure when this will be released, but I think by the time this is released, we should pretty much have the entire program implemented. We've only got a few modules remaining. So we're pretty much in a full rollout mode right now. So we're starting to get initial feedback. This is pretty much a finished program as it relates to the development and implementation, but we definitely are, still kind of working through some ways that we are going to look to evaluate. I think we're definitely going to, look at doing level one feedback assessments. And, you know, throughout the courses, we do have several check on learnings just to make sure that the learner's engaged. And that was one thing that we did through the design is, hey, we don't want this to be a click and play for 15 minutes and right, you can tune right. everything out. The modules are very much so meant to be engaging. So we do have some, you know, somewhat level two assessments in there. In the future, I really would like to get to level three to where maybe we can provide some observation guides for managers. We're not quite there yet, but we would love to be able to measure that behavior change, in their actual jobs. But, and then, you know, level four, we have a great, workforce analytics team, and I say team, it's one person, and he does the job of like 10 people. He's incredible. Shout out to Matt. But yeah, I think we can set up some dashboards to show, you know, I mean, of the people who are going through this, you know, what are the measurables that we can take? I think the easiest and most obvious one is turnover. You know, are we retaining the people that we're developing? Not only that, but what about their team members? Are the people who are going through this program, are we seeing more retention on their teams than maybe those who haven't gone through this training? So those are really the things that we're starting to put together and formulate.
I think that's great. I knew you were just implementing it, but even having that eye on future improvements, and I know it's hard, like if it was up to me, we would always tinker all the time to make it better. And yet I know you, obviously this was level 101. I'm certain you have plans to move on and work on other things, and obviously this is not your only priority, but really trying to get at that level 3 and 4, I think is hard. A lot of companies struggle with that, and it sounds like you have some really good plans to do that, which is exciting. And then to make it in a way that, you know, we can see it in a dashboard, we can understand it better, and we kind of know what the real impact of the learning is.
We're already kind of thinking about phase two with this of, you know, once a manager completes this, like I said, the scope is narrow. It's new managers. We're just looking for them to become confident and competent in their roles so that they don't feel intimidated on their jobs. But, you know, once they finish this, what's the next step for them? So we're starting to look at, you know, we're in the very early stages, but we need to do a proper needs assessment again. So kind of starting from scratch. So we'll probably be reaching out to Blaine very soon. I've kind of put the bug in her ear on that. We definitely want to keep pushing because, you know, one of the things that I am focused on is just management training in general and being able to equip our managers to be able to to lead people better.
Absolutely. And that's certainly for everything we've seen in the industry. I mean, that's just becoming, it's really rising to the top as one of the big industry needs, because when we have quiet quitting and we, you know, have people that need to be upskilled, reskilled, or just kind of the whole real upheaval right now in the workforce, developing, like you said, you know, I love those two goals. They sound so simple. They're not. Obviously, there are 21 modules required to help someone feel competent and confident. But, you know, that speaks to a desire to help not just those new managers, but as you mentioned, everyone on their team, which again helps create a healthy workforce and a healthy bottom line and, you know, for Sonepar, which is, again, what, you know, what they're looking for. So I think it's great you're already looking to move forward a little. So to end here, I'm excited. We always do this, this what are you learning well now segment at the end of the podcast. And to be honest, I never ask my guests in advance what their answer is going to be. So I always sort of wait with bated breath. I've had everything from learning about sheep on a farm to books, more traditional books that are being read or something new in the industry, really all sorts of things. But the reason I ask it is A, it's a little bit fun, and B, I just discovered everyone in our industry, it just seems like they're curious. Curious about new things and curious about who, what somebody else in the industry is learning. And we usually end up getting at a little bit, well, how do you prefer to learn that? And those answers range widely too, from I just watch a YouTube video to, you know, I just jump in and tinker and figure it out. So Grant, I would love to know, what are you learning well now?
Great question. So, I mean, like I said, the instructional design aspect is relatively new for me in my career. So I'm constantly, you know, learning how to continue to be a good and better instructional designer through experience and learning from others, especially. So, I mean, one of the things I'm focused on now is, you know, creating better assessments. So when we talk about level one assessments, as we start to look at this program and all of the courses we have, all of the programs that we offer our associates, one of the things we're not really doing is we're not doing a great job at assessing, you know, the effectiveness of them. And we're starting to take a step back and say, okay, we need to one, do assessments properly, right? Sure. But one of the things that has kind of come up recently is creating better assessments and standardized assessments. So, you know, if you create something standard and you apply it to all your programs or all your courses, then, you know, you can measure by the same criteria across the board. Mm-hmm. And I think that is powerful. And you can essentially determine what the effectiveness is of this program versus that program if you're looking at it from a level set like that. And, you know, one of the challenges in learning and development is that you're constantly having to prove your value. And I think, you know, we can do that through data and measurables. So it's really important. I'm increasingly seeing that, you know, it's really important to make sure that we are measuring any of the programs that we're implementing so that we can, like, as you said, Miriam, continue to tinker with those and make sure that, you know, even after we've really implemented this, we need to make sure that we're constantly improving based on the data that we are learning. So that is kind of the, I guess, not boring answer, but that's more the by the book. You know, personally, I think I'm learning a lot through being a father. I'm a dad of two. My oldest boy just turned three, and we're going through potty training right now. Yeah. So one thing I'm learning well, I think. Yeah, right. It's a lot of what we talked about earlier, right?
Mostly.
Yeah, formative. It's a lot of what we talked about earlier. The 70% just kind of learned by learned along the way. That's pretty much what I'm doing right now. But yeah, it's fantastic, but, you know, potty training is hard. So if you have any ideas of how I could be learning more well or better than well, that would be great.
Yeah, we'll have our listeners send tips for you. It is interesting, though, isn't it? Like, when you're in this profession, I mean, whether you like it or not, whether our families like it or not, or, you know, people in our sphere of influence, we carry it over, right? So we're thinking about it all the time, even when it's like you said, something like potty training or skills around the house or just whatever it might be, we carry it over. So thank you for sharing. You know, assessments are not boring, and assessments are really how we know if we're doing a good job. So that's really, and it's honestly, they're also, they get a bad rap, but it's just because nobody wants to be assessed. But the point is that, you know, if your new managers want to be better at what they do, which I'm sure they do, this is the way to find out if it's working or not. So I love that you're really focused on that. Blaine, what about you?
Yeah, neither of mine are as productive or impactful as Grant's. So you really set me up for that one, buddy.
That's okay.
I would say, so I love to cook, and I've got a few new cookbooks for Christmas, and I'm making my way through a Mediterranean one right now. So I actually have like some stuff marinating in my kitchen, getting ready for me to cook something new.
What's for dinner tonight?
Over. Yeah.
Yeah, right. Okay, so it sounds really weird, so no judgment, but it's lamb heart.
Oh.
So.
Yeah, you're right. That is pretty weird.
Thank you.
Playing around with like, just, you know,
you could have given me like 50 guesses, and I would not have been anywhere in the vicinity of lamb heart for dinner today.
I know. And I honestly won't lie. I do love finding like weird stuff like that and cooking it and seeing if I like it. And the truth is, like, I do like liver, which is an organ meat. So I think I might like this too. So we'll see.
Where do you have a local lamb heart market that you go to for your lamb heart?
I do have to drive a little to the boondocks to get there. Yes, I have to find.
Well, the people on the podcast want to know who your lamb heart guy is, Blaine.
Honestly, I don't even know the name. I just know how to get there. It's like it's the other way around. I can't remember the city. I know how to get there. And it's farther south than I am right now, and I'm pretty far south.
Well,
sorry, listener, the secret is safe with Blaine. Yeah.
We'll I'm gatekeeping my lamb heart distributor.
That's right. If you really want to know, we'll send you a message. And Blaine, you may very well have just taken my last like out there example was how to raise sheep. And we're still in the same genre of lamb hearts. So you've become my new example. So,
Oh God.
What a perfect
ending.
Yeah, that's
experience.
Yes.
That's how I'll be remembered.
I want to thank both of you so much for coming on the podcast, for being honest just about, you know, both. The way that you're working in your organizations, what you're trying to do, what you're trying to improve, the challenges. I love that kind of your history. I really appreciate it. It's been so good to get to know you better, Grant. I think we need to do a follow-up here. Sounds like pretty soon once we start to get some of those measurables and find out how things are going.
Yeah, I'd love to be back anytime. Thanks.
That'd be great. We'll look for that. So for our listeners, if you're looking to interact more with us, if you want to find out about Blaine's lamb heart dealer or how potty training is going, you can find our posts on MindSpring's Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn every time we release a new podcast. But mostly we just thank you for listening. We know your time is a gift, and we thank you for choosing to spend it with us.
Thanks again for tuning in to the Learning Well podcast. If you enjoyed what you heard today, please leave some feedback on whatever platform you're streaming on. We'd really appreciate it. We'll see you in the next episode.